The Prime Minister has visited Australia's biggest private investment project, the Gorgon LNG development on WA's Barrow Island. The day trip came ahead of Cabinet today in Perth, one of the Cabinet's last meetings before the budget and perhaps before an election. The PM has taken his ministers to the West, ground zero of Australia's transformation from a mining boom to a more diversified economy. Resources Minister Josh Frydenberg was with the PM on Barrow Island, and he'll also accompany him on this week's visit to China, our biggest energy export market. The Minister joins us from Perth now. Josh Frydenberg, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning to you, friend.
Minister, I will come to your visit to the West and particularly to Barrow Island in a moment, but first can I go to another issue? No fewer than eight coalition MPs now saying they either support a royal commission into the banks or at least open to the idea. Has the Prime Minister made the wrong call? Was he too hasty ruling out Labor's proposal for such an inquiry?
Absolutely not. I mean, this has been our consistent position that we've been against a royal commission. Indeed, it was the Labor Party's consistent position, Fran, last year when they voted against such a motion in the Senate. And suddenly we're on the eve of an election and the populist politics reigns supreme with Bill Shorten. But ASIC and APRA, they have powers that are greater than a royal commission. They're doing their work. In the last 6 months alone, ASIC has laid 42 criminal charges, more than 20 infringement notices, secured nearly $150 million in compensation. It's actually doing its job right now. And we've just had the largest financial system inquiry in nearly two decades, the Murray Report. It recommended a number of stronger powers for ASIC, product intervention powers, and those are now being implemented.
Yeah, there's a lot of contention about whether ASIC really does have stronger powers than a Royal Commission. It certainly doesn't have broader powers. I mean, the Royal Commission is very different to a cop on the beat. As Bill Shorten says, it can join the dots. I mean, there are different things. It's just, people are worried now, I think, given all the scandals in the banking sector and the financial services sector and the insurance sector, that there's systemic problems in our system. ASIC can't deal with that, but a Royal Commission could.
Well, there has certainly been cultural problems within the banking system, and there are plenty of examples of that, and the Prime Minister himself had very strong words when he visited Westpac just a week ago, and we'd like to see a greater alignment between better consumer outcomes and remuneration in the banking system. But it's also a pillar of our economy, a strong banking system, and I think it does perform very well. But ASIC and APRA are the cop on the beat. They are investigating problems where they exist, and they're starting to get results.
Some have criticised this as a captain's call by the Prime Minister. Was it a captain's call, or did Cabinet meet and decide on the rejecting the notion of a Royal Commission?
Look, it certainly wasn't a captain's call. This has been, as I said, our consistent position, not just under Malcolm Turnbull, but previously under Tony Abbott. And, you know, the Cabinet discusses lots of issues related to the economy, and this is one. But if you ask me what's the bigger issue today, it's what is the Labor Party's response to the news that they were actually briefed, Fran, about the disastrous negative gearing policy that they have, which they were told, based on an independent report, that home value would go down.
Sorry to interrupt, Minister, but that's got nothing to do with the banking inquiry, which we're talking about now. And actually, on the program, we've just heard an interview with the Shadow Treasurer, Chris Bowen, refuting that. But that's not the discussion really for here and now, I don't think, for us. Can we go to your portfolio now, resources, and the long-running dispute with East Timor over revenues from the oil and gas reserves and the Timor Gap? Yesterday, we heard Dili has advised the government it's taking Australia to the UN for compulsory conciliation. This will shine the light, an international spotlight, on our dealings with East Timor. Is it going to be embarrassing for us, a wealthy Western country throwing its weight around to threaten the economy of a tiny neighbour?
Look, we think we can work very effectively with East Timor for mutual gain when it comes to the development of these resources. I mean, there are three treaties that are in place with East Timor. They've been in place for some time, and they've actually been encouraged by UNCLOS, which is the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, to put in these provisional arrangements pending final maritime boundaries. Now, your listeners need to understand that the greatest benefit and the greatest beneficiary of these agreements has actually been East Timor, because in the Joint Petroleum Development Area, which is the one that is currently producing, 90% of the revenue has gone to East Timor and just 10% to Australia. So that has meant over $12 billion to East Timor and just over $1 billion to Australia. Now, there's another field called the Sunrise Field, which is 80% in Australia's exclusive seabed jurisdiction. But the agreement we reached with East Timor was that would be divided 50-50. Now, that's yet to be developed. We hope it is. But certainly East Timor are the ones who are getting the greatest benefit out of this.
Well, that's not what East Timor says. It says it's been dotted billions of dollars in oil and gas royalties. There's only temporary resources sharing arrangements at the moment because Australia's withdrawn from the boundary jurisdiction of the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, hasn't it?
Well, these provisional arrangements are actually encouraged. I mean, Malaysia and Thailand also reached a similar agreement to defer final maritime boundaries while they extract the gas. Japan and Korea did a similar agreement. And we think any move to go towards this compulsory arbitration or coordination actually contravenes the previous agreements that both countries voluntarily entered into.
So will Australia participate in conciliation? The opposition has said a Labor government would submit to arbitration.
Well, we believe that we've got the right agreements in place, and
both countries
should stick to them. Well, we're not about to enter into these further discussions because we believe we've got the balance right.
Okay, let's go to your visit there in the West. Mining remains a $90 billion+ industry in WA. The Premier Colin Barnett said on the weekend it's still the biggest game in town, but it's rapidly diminishing, of course, in terms of revenue for the Commonwealth. Isn't it time to focus on the other strengths in our economy, like agriculture and high-tech mining services?
Well, I certainly think we can walk and chew gum at the same time. The resources sector, friends, about 10% of our GDP. It employs more than 300,000 Australians, and it's responsible for more than 50% of what we export. And we have these dominant global market positions. We're the number one exporter of coal, we're the number one exporter of iron ore, we have the largest uranium reserves, and we overtake Qatar to be the world's largest exporter of LNG by 2020, and that's the purpose of our visit here to Perth this week. So it would be irresponsible for any government to ignore the huge opportunities that are coming from the industrialisation of Asia to Australia in this area. But at the same time, you're right, we've got to become the food bowl for Asia with agriculture. We've got to focus on services. 70% of our economy is services, and I think the Prime Minister, through the free trade agreements, through his international visits, through the work he's doing around the country, is actually advancing both causes at the same time.
There are forecasts Australia will become the biggest LNG exporter by 2020. Is gas going to be the source of the next mining export boom for Australia, as it was trumpeted just a few years ago?
I actually do think it will be, because we'll be tripling our production between now and 2020, and we'll be supplying as a country 40% of all the gas needs of Japan by that time, and of China by that time, and 25% of Korea's gas needs. And the International Energy Agency, Fran, says of all the fossil fuels, gas is the only one that increases as a proportion of the overall energy mix between now and 2040, because it's a cleaner form of fuel than, let's say, coal. And what is really impressive in Australia is the level of innovation. And yesterday we were at the Gorgon facility. This has the largest carbon capture and storage facility ever built in the world, where they separate the gas from the CO2 and they inject the carbon dioxide 2 kilometres below the surface into a saline formation. That is an incredible facility that they've actually built there, which is good for the environment and, of course, good for the economy.
Okay, and just finally, Minister, you head to Shanghai on Thursday with the Prime Minister. China has been flooding world markets with cheap steel, and that's one of the reasons why Arium has gone into administration in Whyalla. Now, the British Foreign Secretary, Phil Hammond, is urging the Chinese to accelerate efforts to reduce levels of steel production. The United States actually slapped punitive tariffs on Chinese steel imports last month. Will the Prime Minister be doing and saying anything about this when he meets the Chinese leadership? Will he follow Britain's lead and urge China to reduce the levels of steel production? And if not, why not?
Well, the first thing to say about the China-Australia relationship is we are the great beneficiary, Fran. I mean, we have $150 billion worth of trade with China.
Yeah, but tell that to Arium at the moment.
Right, but $100 billion of what of that trade is actually what we export. Now, as for the Prime Minister's discussion, yes, he'll be talking about a whole range of relevant issues to the Australian marketplace, no doubt, including the ones that you have been referring to. But we are a great beneficiary of the China-Australia relationship, and our free trade agreement that we've put in place will actually lead to 96% of all goods we export to be tariff-free over the life of that agreement. That's great news for not just our agricultural producers and our resources companies, but also for our education institutions, our tourism institutions, our other research institutions.
Sure, Minister, of course, but just very briefly, for all those people in Whyalla listening and beyond, what will the Prime Minister's message to the Chinese be on steel?
Well, we don't tolerate dumping of international steel in Australia, and that we have actually strengthened. Chris Pine has done that. He's strengthened the anti-dumping provisions, and of course, you know, we're trying to do everything we can to support our end because we want to see the continuation of a viable, successful steel industry in Australia. And
okay.
Can I just make one last point, which is, again, you've got to question what Bill Shorten stands for, because one minute he supported the carbon tax, which punished the steel industry because it's an energy-intensive industry. Now he's saying we need to support that steel industry as a result of some of the punishing policies his government put in place.
Minister, thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be with you, friend.
Josh Frydenberg is the Minister for Resources and Energy and Northern Australia.